Okay. Yeah, thanks for coming to my talk. My name is Yoshinari Nishiki. For short, I'm known as Inari. I've been based in the Netherlands for the past 7 years, but I'm just started my PhD, engineering PhD, remotely from my hometown in Japan. I'm really sort of living in between the Netherlands and Japan right now. This title of the talk is Critical Making, the Unmaking Towards Unmaking. And I just wanted to ask, like, who knows critical making here? And who knows unmaking here? Okay, it's really good. Okay, this is a very good start. Okay, thanks so much. So I'm just going to start my talk then. So I'm going to first go into the very last one, and unmaking with the brackets. So it's a new kind of making practice based on a new kind of productivity argument, where the more one avoids production, the more productive they are. What it means is that the we're still pretty much living in this world based on like time and motion study, which was initiated in the 20th century, early 20th century, where basically the more you can produce in a limited time frame, the more productive you are. So, but then if you think about it, the environmental crisis and all situations right now, the productivity measurement should be opposite. The more you can avoid production in a limited time frame, the more productive you are. So that's basically the argument trying to make. And here in unmaking, with the very last one with the brackets, the most important thing is still, though, creativity in avoiding production. So I'm not just talking about just lying in bed all day and just not doing nothing, but instead I'm kind of trying to somehow value creativity here. And so I'm trying to kind of come up with this measure other than recycling or reuse or upcycling. So so this is the historical transition of making movements since 2005. Some may argue against the end of the maker movement in 2019. So it's basically the main company who was behind this movement went bankrupt. So some people argue that this was the sort of definitive moment where this movement finished. And in 2011, somebody called Matto Ratto, he wrote this paper about critical making. It's basically about trying to think through making. So actually the subject, the making, the made objects themselves are not the sort of most important things, but to think through it is the sort of the most important thing. And then from about 2020, there's this new thing called unmaking. Before then, the people have been using this term unmaking, but only in a set with making. So in other words, making and unmaking of something. It means that digging deeply into a subject. But then people started to use this term unmaking independently around 2020. And it means has a sort of degrowth aspect to it, and it has sort of anti-capitalist attitude in it. And but interesting, I'm more interested in the one in the field of human-computer interaction, the way they use this term. And then since last year, I started unmaking. I did already twice unmaker fair in Delft and Eindhoven last year. I've been doing some talks around unmaking, and also like kind of trying to come up with unmade objects and all that. And okay, so for those who don't know much maybe about maker movements, I'm gonna dive into what it means for each movement. So maker movement, for me, this is the best maker object made ever. So it's called a mind over melon. made by Hackerspace in Louisville in the United States in 2012. So it's basically it's a force, we call it Star Wars force kind of gadget. So you basically kind of concentrate, and then sort of the device detects the sort of your concentration, and then do triggers something. But they connect it with the explosion of a watermelon. So I think it's a really nice object. And in critical making, as I said before, the aim of this movement is not to make objects, but to think through it. So this paper has been referenced so much, and it's basically about how they shifted the point of 3D making from making a perfect object that might last forever to some objects that's kind of designed to decay through designated patterns of some sort of destruction. So in other words, they're trying to find aesthetics in the modes of decay, rather than kind of trying to make sort of achieve plastic perfection. So what I try to do in this talk is that each movement has its own sort of most representative publication. So for Maker Movement's Maker Magazine, I especially focused on the one before Maker Community Takeover. So this was, like I said before, the sort of the, in a sense, the end of the Maker Movement proper, and it became a community instead. So, and for critical making, it's one of the most prominent figures, Garnet Hertz, and he made sort of a kind of zine-like publication, and so I sort of that sort of a, and for Unmaking, recently came out the special issue on Unmaking from this journal called Tokai. So it's connected to this conference called KAI, which is one of the most biggest conferences in the human-computer interaction. So I'm trying to basically find historical foundation of this concept of unmaking in each publication. So basically, my argument is that people already, while making things or kind of trying to think through making, or they already kind of had this idea of not making things or not wanting to make things. So let's see where you can find it. So unmade-ish objects you can find in Make magazine. This is a 10-second stomp rocket. So it's like Make magazine, you find a lot of projects centered around rockets. And so, but this person just thought that from this package drink, just you insert something and just you can just immediately launch a rocket without making any kind of effort. So this is the second object, Eco Gym. So it's like somebody in rural Spain, I think, they came up with the making gym machines out of discarded, mainly wood materials, and then just to kind of open up the gym to the public for free. So this is a dirty car art. So you sometimes see extremely dirty cars on the street, and then just somebody actually took a sort of opportunity and then just trying to make art on those very dirty cars. So this is super green greenhouse. So somebody made this one's quite straightforward, but somebody trying to make a greenhouse out of the plastic bottles. So this is a paper hardware. So this is somebody trying to make a the electronic appliance, but solely made from paper that looks real but not functional. So this one is a shelter from the bus. So it's again somebody trying to make a bus stop out of an old bus. So this is Stone Age telegraph. So somebody trying to send a telegraph message with materials only you can find in the forest. And apparently he succeeded it or something like that. So in critical making, you find different kinds of objects to make a movement, because their aim is not to make things, but to think through making things. So this one, the first one, called the huggable atomic mushroom. So instead of making bombs, somebody made a bomb in a way that you can hug, and so it kind of exploded. So this is the hazmat kite. So there's somebody did an artist in residence in the polluted area, and then just sort of trying to indicate the sign of pollution, and he kind of flew this the kite with this sort of toxic sign. So this is the first hackerspace founded in China. And so it's a kind of a strange attempt in a sense, because just they had to make things from necessity, but then they kind of they combined it with this sort of countercultural culture. This is somebody who trying to make artworks based on more contingencies. They didn't want to just try to make things that they had in mind, but they instead kind of let the artwork the kind of take over the flow and then just see where it comes out. So unmade-ish objects you can find in Tokai. It's in unmaking and without brackets. So instead of this is the unmaking. It's got a paper titled "Unmaking Electronic Waste" from this year, 2024, and it's about how you can sort of do differently with sort of streams of electronic instead of just kind of make things and discarding. And this is called a remake to unmake to remake, materiality-driven rapid prototyping. It's a project focused on recycling 3D printed materials, because what happens normally is that you print something and you have to just throw it. So instead, they came up with some sort of structures that you can sort of rebuild some stuff with it. So just kind of clever structures that they came up with, and then they build something, and then just they sort of dismantle it and build again and stuff. So this is a bit that's peculiar research, but it's called Unmaking Data Imaginaries, the Data Epics. And it's a research that where they asked some science fiction writers to come up with different ways to write about, express about data, and sort of this is what they came up with, and sort of the data was kind of depicted in different ways, like the selves mirroring multiple image identities, expansion, or the screen, or peeling apart, or you know something like that. So what I'm making is, but still it's kind of maybe blur for many people, but I'm based on this researcher in the 1990s, to ecologists. So to ecologists means that the the ecologies are different to environmentalists. The way they more looking for radical change instead of a gradual shifts. So like those who are supporting electric cars and those things, they're more like environmentalists, and ecologists more kind of aiming for radical change. For those who are more looking for radical change, the only green product is the one that is not produced. So he rather kind of, I assume he rather said that like as a sort of hypothesis, like sort of, it's not probably actually, there's no object like that, so you know, it's kind of almost ironical. But then, what I'm trying to do in my research is trying to make such actual thing while not escaping for virtuality or the or investing or something like that. So my aim is actually how you can sort of still make value or create value while not making things. So if sort of those like what I call the unmade objects, technically non-produced items, material-wise, if they carry the highest value, and can we actually escape production? So that's the sort of question I'm trying to ask. And there's some sort of a bureaucratic hack and kind of stuff that I'm trying to apply, but I'm not going to go into details here. So this is more like a qualitative aspect of this unmade object. So it's kind of the feeling of how you can kind of still kind of come up with something while actively not making it, is that the it can be based on this Japanese saying called the kaze ga fukeba okeya ga mokaru. It means that when the wind blows, the barrel maker prospers. So the barrel maker becomes profitable. So it's an ancient kind of saying. So where the wind blows, the wind blows up the sand, and then sand gets into people's eyes. And back in the days, the blind people could only play this traditional instrument called the shamisen. And then this shamisen, well, back in the days, made from cat skins. And as a result, there are less cats on the street. And as a result, there are more rats on the street. And those more rats basically then ate more barrels. And so that's how the sort of saying works. And basically then kind of try, the point of unmaking for me is that the how you can try to cause this to happen with intention. Sort of, so it's basically what it means that the based on how you sort of situate yourself in a sort of situation or some how you might find some value in some things, and then you can kind of sort of let the supply chain like form for you instead of you actively making it. Because once you try to sort of focus to make something with intention, then you just inevitably make some byproducts, externalities, and that's like inevitable. So just kind of how I'm trying to sort of explore how you can just let things form up for you instead of making any kind of products. So yeah, that's what the unmaking is all about. And again, and it's a bit shorter than I expected, but I'm open to questions. Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you, Inari, for this nice talk. A little bit of art, a little bit of philosophy, a lot of constructing, deconstructing things. I would like to ask you now if you have questions, and I come to you and give it up, please.
Is your concept mainly focused on material things? What is it about services or immaterial values? They are not a problem if we make them, or is it not the same?
Okay, I'm kind of here, in my research, like I'm more focused on materials, just as a kind of make more point to the material culture in general. So, but of course the services or like, actually I've made some unmade objects, more kind of immaterial or sort of approach unmade objects myself, but then it's definitely in the scope, but not the main focus of my research. Just to kind of, because since we primarily live in material culture, then I'm kind of trying to tackle this problem of the having to make things material-wise. That's if I'm answering to your question correctly. Oh, yeah.
Okay, next question. Yeah, so all this is super, super fascinating. I've never heard of any of it before. It's awesome. This idea that you let these supply lines naturally emerge rather than forcing them, you lose a certain amount of efficiency, I would guess, because with a factory, you could produce a whole bunch, whereas if something naturally emerges, and that need emerges, you would have to make it on the spot, which reduces all the waste. And now I get to my question. That inefficiency is preferable to the alternative of forcing a product from an ecological perspective. That's the claim that you're making, that the inefficiency is a good is a good trade-off to have from an ecological perspective. Like it's a natural thing. It will be more inefficient, but the trade-off is worth it from an ecological perspective. Is that correct?
It's more of actually like how what I'm trying to focus is that the like a value like I said, like a value creation. So like how people find more value might find more value in this sort of I wouldn't just say inefficient process. So as I have a kind of good example. So I first found the sort of plastic bucket. A quite large one, and I immediately thought, oh, maybe I can make a bath like in my rooftop. But I needed sort of this horse. But then kind of somehow I thought, like, Mom, I don't want to buy this horse. But just probably like I live in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, so just you find many things on the street. And I just thought to myself, yeah, probably I'll find this horse at some point and just kind of let this idea float. And then just this one day, as I'm just walking on the street, oh yeah, I did find this horse. Okay, great. And then, you know, sort of get this sort of sorted. And then I sort of effectively, you know, the main difference between just buying this horse from a store and just finding is just you just avoided the whole bunch of the change that's, you know, just created for this horse. So just the kind of people, I don't know where this horse come from, but just all the, you know, primary materials to all the sort of, you know, transportation, everything. You just skipped everything, right? And I think I find more value in this process. So just not about efficiency. I mean, it's more efficient in a sense.
Yeah. Kind of, it's a very hyper-aware state of being of watching these things emerge naturally.
Yeah.
So we have a few more questions here, and a reminder for the internet. You can send us your questions on Matrix channel for the half stage. So feel free to ask some more questions. Please go on with the next one.
Hey, so that story that you just told about the finding the bucket and looking for the hoses, it's a very familiar one for anybody who's grown up in like a low socioeconomic background. I grew up in a real white trash situation, and that's exactly how you build everything. So boats, clotheslines, furniture, you know, that's just how you do it when you're a poor person. So how do you connect what you're working on to existing, you know, cultures of unmaking that have been going on for, you know, since there are people probably?
You mean the connection of my research to the already existing stream of unmaking?
Yeah, correct. Because it sounds like stuff that people have been doing, poor people specifically, have been doing forever.
Oh, I see. Okay. In that sense, I think that's also the kind of... Yeah, but I think it's more about my approach is kind of more intervention in terms of value, I think, sort of how I'm trying to sort of, I guess the way it is right now is done by more the way you say poor people. I think it's not like valued right now, which is kind of basically then sort of in general maybe, and then I'm kind of trying to sort of in a sense kind of reframe it, those kind of activities as a sort of more valuable sort of. Things that you can do, and I think it's more that kind of a direction that I'm kind of trying to make connection to. I think.
Okay. I'm quite anomaly here, as I'm kind of capitalist entrepreneur, creative person. I'm not the unmaker. However, I do like the process of creative destruction and reduction of the things, and what kind of gets me, if you try to use this sort of thinking on reduction or simplifying things, kind of like the controlling this control destruction, because what I had from your presentation, it was more like absolute, like removing things. But if the process can be applied as a reducing things, it might be quite useful even in creative approach. What's your opinion on that?
I didn't sort of touch upon it in my presentation, but that's exactly what I'm trying to do. So I have this like the bureaucratic hack that I mentioned is that it's basically the about 85% rules, and that's mainly applied to wine products in Europe. So if you wanted to kind of call something some wine from somewhere, then above 85% of the wine or grapes has to come from this region. But in other words, 15% of the grapes can come from anywhere. And if you kind of try to swap that sort of statement, then you can effectively say that if 85% was made in nowhere, then if 15% was made in somewhere, then you can still call it. It was not made anywhere, like bureaucratically. So just kind of, that's kind of a bureaucratic hack I'm trying to make. And so that's actually, my aim is actually more sticking to this 15% line of making, than just to kind of, then it sort of, you can on paper say that you didn't make it. Sort of, yeah, that's the sort of.
Then I do recommend renaming the concept. Because the unmaking can make a lot of people nervous. Not people in this audience. I do believe people in this audience are fine, but people outside of this audience will get really like, oh my God, that's another anarchist destroying my world, which is stupid, but that's the life. But I think that the creative destruction thing is definitely something. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So let's go on here.
I'm a physical instructor with a background of the Alexander technique, and for me the idea of unmaking is more positive, actually, because Alexander had the idea that there's like the habit, and there's also something that we do involuntarily, habitually, and there's the idea of like non-doing and undoing what you habitually do. Was this idea of the of habitual making something that came up in your work?
So I'm not familiar with the Alexander technique. Would you be able to maybe like elaborate on this? What it is?
It's a kind of introspective psychophysical observation, and with that you can find out about your like physical habits, and if you discover the habits, that you can go into the process of undoing them, or going into the non-doing of the making. But for that you have to go through the process of discovering what is actually the habit that creates this like continuously bringing you back in doing the same and producing the same. And I think sometimes it's interesting to think about all our production that we do, all this producing is also probably has the background of habitual repetition, and it's difficult to escape from going on making. So that was interesting for me. But I think the question what is behind is this like habit that creates the repetition.
That's how I'm kind of trying to also sort of differentiate this concept from like recycling or reuse or upcycling, in the way that sort of, in my opinion, like those three concepts, they typically kind of do a copy and paste. If one finds something, then just to kind of carry on doing the same method. It's like, for example, a good example is like a mushroom grown on the coffee waste or something like that. And just once find something, and then just to kind of do the copy and paste. But I'm making, and that I'm kind of advocating, trying to advocate, is that the basically kind of trying to make a one-of-a-kind sort of object, sort of one-of-a-kind process. So that's why like I sort of trying to make the creativity in avoiding production is like kind of, you know, key concept. So how you can sort of challenge yourself, like in kind of not just kind of scavenging things from the streets, but kind of new processes that maybe no one ever did it before and kind of stuff like that. So it's answering your question, I'm not sure. Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure I understood one portion correctly, where, you know, unlike the whole is unmaking good or bad or anarchist versus capitalist type thing, you're trying to prove a value in unmaking, where those terms barely even apply, because if you can find a value in the process of unmaking, then people, even entrepreneurs and things, will naturally move in that direction because there is value there. Is that what I'm what you're saying? Am I understanding that correctly? If you can find value in that unmaking with the bracket system, then people, businesses, all these things will naturally be moving in that direction, which is both good for, you know, from an ecological perspective, but also from a human fulfillment and potentially even a business perspective.
I mean, it's true, but then already like businesses are kind of trying to like more or less superficially kind of trying to kind of show that they head towards this direction. So a good example is like once I found this beer on the train in Germany, where they stated the it's made from, it's kind of ticking sort of all the points, like they in this beer they actually make from waste bread instead of like not all, but just a part of it is made from waste bread, and also kind of carbon neutral, and kind of all these pressing all the buttons in a sense. But then at the same time, then I had a question, so why are you still then making it? You know, just to kind of course, that if you wanted to, kind of businesses, I'm already saying they have to kind of almost forced to say, they're forced to say that either like superficially or substantially that they're like making effort towards this direction of not making. But then my question is that why then actually, how can we really achieve the status of not making? Because at the end of the day, they still seems to be heading towards the direction of making. But yeah, still, yeah. So the kind of try. And what I'm trying to do here is kind of trying to sort of flip the sort of. That's why the productivity argument comes in. Sort of somehow we need to kind of shift the productivity argument to. The more you avoid production in a creative way, the more value you are making. Kind of, you know. Then you can sort of. Then at the moment, still the how the economy functions and everything. I think it's just all based on how, based on this like a time and motion study way of thinking. So just that the more you produce in a limited time frame, the more productive you are. Maybe we still kind of get rid of this thing. So you know. So that's what I'm trying to sort of do. Yeah.
Hi, I have a more free software perspective, so free is as in freedom. And for instance, if you take a like useful product like a Flash programmer, there is also another way to do it without producing anything. This is like writing software or documentation to do it with hardware people already have. Does that kind of process fit into unmaking, or what do you think about that?
Can you maybe...
Basically, instead of producing hardware, you write software or documentation to do the same thing with hardware people already have. This means that, for instance, if people have microcontrollers, you will try to support as many of them to do a specific function. And so people don't have to buy the hardware to do this function, but instead like install software on things they already have. But it's more work and so on. Does that fit into the definition of unmaking or not?
In a sense, yes, but I see this more as a sort of escaping for the virtuality. But what I'm trying to do is that the I'm still kind of trying to primarily deal with only materials and then trying to sort of achieve the same. So maybe I would maybe even ask the whole sort of if you maybe should have this function in the first place, and maybe I decide then not to do it or something like that. And then I'm, maybe that might be more fitted to unmaking than sort of virtualizing the functions.
Okay. The assumption was that the function was useful, obviously.
Thanks so much.
There is one more question in the back.
I'm sorry, I need to get back to my thing about the names and naming, because I'm actually teaching on the two universities too, by the way, as a side job, and they are kind of conservative one. How do you want to surpass the general problem of the human being of the risk loss aversion? Because in the moment you create the unmaking, and you call it unmaking, that everybody's kind of afraid of losing things. So how to, maybe it's just in a naming or approach, and I do understand your concept, I'm quite fine with that, but how do you get over the monkeys in our heads?
I still haven't come up with the way, so that's why like still the kind of unmaking bracket around un.
I personally like the Israeli concept of creative destruction. And it's true is that when you go to Israeli startup ecosystem, I'm quite connected there, it's working in a society. True is you need a strong military to beat out of your heads the habits. That's the unfortunate thing.